smelling the incense and flowers? We did that? No. No. Okay. And then maybe you can also bring a couple of lamps here, if they want to write or something. I know. You bring from that side those ones up there in the back. Hare Krishna. Okay, Nectar Devotion, Chapter 9. Smelling the incense and flowers offered to the deity. In the Hari Bhakti Shudodai, there is a statement about the incense which is offered in the temple. When the devotees smell the good flavor of the incense which is offered to the deity, they thus become cured of the poisonous effects of material contamination, as much as one becomes cured of a snake bite by smelling the prescribed medicinal herbs. The explanation of this verse is that there is an herb found in the jungles which expert persons know how to use to revive the consciousness of one who is bitten by a snake. Simply by smelling that herb, one becomes immediately relieved of the poisonous effects of the snake bite. The same example is applicable. When a person comes to visit the temple and smells the incense offered to the deity, he is cured at the same time from his material contamination. So it means that the snake bite of material existence, material desire, so by smelling the incense, then this becomes removed. So to that degree that we are, how do you say, appreciative of this, to that degree that we are, we understand, you know, that it's coming from the Lord's mercy, the Lord's prasad, then to that degree we become purified. But even if not, even if we don't understand anything, we still become purified. Just like the person who has been bitten by the snake, then they're unconscious by smelling, then they become conscious. They're cured. So, yeah, like that. It's just that it may be a little slower. While someone's conscious, maybe a little quicker. That's all. But this is very important, the accepting things that are in connection to Krishna. We want to engage the senses. We have come to the material world because of the desire to enjoy the senses. But that was without Krishna, not in connection with Krishna. So then this works very nicely, is that we can engage our senses, but it is being engaged in Krishna's service, and we become purified. So we change. Like that. Any devotee coming into the temple should always offer something to the deity, fruit, flowers, incense, etc. If one cannot offer anything in cash, something else must be offered. In India, the system is that all the ladies and gentlemen who come in the morning to visit the temple bring so many things. Even one morsel of rice or one morsel of flour can be offered. It is a regulative principle that one should not go to see a saintly person or the deity in the temple without any offering. The offering may be very humble, or it may be very priceless. Even a flower, a little fruit, a little water, whatever is possible, must be offered. So when a devotee comes to offer something to the deity in the morning, he is sure to smell the good flavor of the incense, and then at once he will become cleansed of the poisonous effect of material existence. So it means the whole, we're trying to retrain ourselves that we do everything for Krishna. Means we have developed the habit to do things for ourselves and not for Krishna. So then the whole idea is that then Krishna, through this pancharatrik process and by the devotional process, gives us ways in which we can engage ourselves in the Lord's service again and make the Lord the center of everything. So it's very natural that in the material world we see things through externals. So we have a body, we have a gross and subtle body. And so dealing with those, then we feel we are able to understand something's happened. So that is the essential point. It starts that process, it starts the relationship. So if someone has something, they give little something like this, whatever they can, a little bit like that. And the Lord is very, very happy, because then that is just a show of affection, like Sudama Brahman. He just gave one grain of chira. That's all. One grain. Means Lakshmi told Krishna, he says, he can't take a second grain. He would have given, well, he didn't actually even, whatever, he was embarrassed about his offering. So Krishna took it himself, because it was relationship. You've come, you've brought something, and Krishna, oh, you've brought me something. So Krishna is very happy. He sees it like that. Point is he has no material agenda. He has no scores to settle up. He doesn't worry about, hey, in this lifetime, you know, you said this about me, and well, he doesn't worry about any of that. Just it's like you've done for me, so nice. Because he's on the platform of pastimes. He doesn't have to worry. You know, we may sometimes in relationships it may not be very deep, or we get all absorbed in many, many considerations, you know, of just who said what, who did what, who this, that, and so many things. But Krishna doesn't have to worry about this. He just, you've done something? Oh, he just accepts it for that. Oh, you brought something for me. He sees it like that. Because, yes. It's a tradition that they would bring like that, but that would be specific more those who are living outside the temple who come into the temple. Because those who are living into the temple, they give more than just a little rice or a little flour. They have to give themselves. Now, if we don't give ourselves and we don't give anything, then that's not very good. Then we're just taking advantage of the facilities. But if that, you know, before that, what do you call it? It's called prabodhanam, offering ourselves. And this submission to the Lord. Then, if these things are there, then it's very. That's the most important, because that's the next stage. First, we see the external. Then we're going to see the mind, the body, mind, and words. Right. So body, that makes sense. Mind and words is subtle. So the mind is our desires and this and that. Our words are then based on this. You know, how we speak, what we think, our emotions, all these different things. So our emotions, our desires, all that needs to be given. Then it's already done. Whatever we've done, the result's already given to Krishna. So it's more for if we are doing something and the result is ours. Like we're doing something, we're doing some business, it's our business, we're getting something. That we should begin to give something to the temple. But if we're just, whatever it is, living with the temple and this and that, then we're giving ourselves. Does that make any sense? Anything else? It is stated in the Tantra Shastra, if the smell of the garland which was offered to the deity in the temple enters into a person's nostrils, immediately his bondage to sinful activities becomes cleared. And even if one has no sinful activities, still by smelling such remnants of flowers, one can advance from Mayavadi, impersonalist, to devotee. That ends the quote there. There are several instances of this, a prime one being the advancement of the four Kumaras. They were impersonal Mayavadis, but after smelling the remnants of flowers and incense in the temple, they turned to become devotees. From the above verse, it appears that the Mayavadis, or impersonalists, are more or less contaminated. They are not pure. Because purity means you have... Devotee means we're trying to get to the platform of pure, unalloyed devotional service. So there's no mix. It's Vishuddha Sattva. But the impersonalists and the Mayavadi, then they are trying to get to this platform of the Brahma-Bhuta, but they have a motive for that. They have a personal motive that the material world is so much trouble, they want to get away from it. That's the thing. They don't have attraction to Krishna, attachment to Krishna. They don't see that the material world belongs to Krishna. They think, it belongs to me, I can't enjoy it, it gives me so much trouble, therefore I reject it. Right? You have something, and it gives you so much trouble, you just want to get rid of it. Right? So that's the Mayavada. So it's not pure. Because it's not a spiritual concept. In the spiritual world, you don't have this impersonal concept. It's not there. So it's materially tinged. Though they may be situated in Brahman, but they're not completely pure. Otherwise, they would enter into the planets, the Vaikuntha planets. So when they start thinking about activity, they come back here to the material world. So it's very, they're not pure. This is so the devotee by yeah. Okay. Is there any questions on that? It is confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One who has not washed off all reactions of sinful activities cannot be a pure devotee. A pure devotee has no more doubts about the supremacy of the personality of Godhead, and thus he engages himself in Krishna consciousness and devotional service. Similar statement is in the Agastya Samhita. Just to purify the impurities of our nostrils, we should try to smell the remnants of flowers offered to Krishna in the temple. So until we're completely pure, means the process of devotional service situates us on the platform of goodness, because a devotee means a Brahmin. A Brahmin means the mode of goodness. But Brahmin as a situation is still material. Right? It's still so, because it's material, it has the modes of passion and ignorance in it. Otherwise, if it's pure goodness, then it's not from here. It's from the spiritual world. That's the transcendental platform. So by devotional service, we become situated in goodness. But the problem is we have attachments to the modes of passion and ignorance. Therefore, to that degree of our attachments, we manifest those impurities. So so when it's said we have to get to the platform of goodness, it means we're having to get to the platform of pure goodness. We're already on the platform of goodness by taking up devotional service. But due to our impurities, then we may not properly execute the duties, you know, ideally. So the sadhana bhakti then becomes very important, because this is process by which we purify, which otherwise there's no other process like that. Karma, jnana, these are too slow. They're not very good on their own. Without bhakti, then they don't have any real meaning. You know, they have basically no meaning. They can only get you to the Brahman, you know, temporarily, or get you to the heavenly planets. So it's not recommended. So it's very important to understand this point. Krishna recommends that we be careful about our activities so that we see that they work in pure goodness. But otherwise, a Vaishnav all automatically is situated on the platform of goodness. But he has to be very careful about the anarthas of passion ignorance. So the devotional process then works on that. Any question on that? No? Jai Ho. Touching the deity. In the Vishnu Dharmotra, there is a statement about touching the lotus feet of the Lord. It is said, only a person who is initiated as a Vaishnava and is executing devotional service in Krishna consciousness has the right to touch the body of the deity. In India, there was agitation during Gandhi's political movement because the low-born classes of men, like street sweepers and chandalas, were prohibited, according to the Vedic system, from entering the temple. Due to their unclean habits, they are prohibited, but at the same time, they are given other facilities so they may be elevated to the highest grade of devotional service by association with pure devotees. A man born in any family is not barred, but he must be cleansed. That cleansing process must be adopted. Gandhi wanted to make them clean simply by stamping them with a fictitious name, Harijana, children of God. And so there was a great tug of war between the temple owners and Gandhi's followers. But anyway, the present law is the law of all scripture. And if anyone is purified, he can enter into the temple. Actually, that is the position. Only one who is properly initiated, who is properly following the rules and regulations, can enter and touch the deity, not all. And one who touches the body of the deity following such regulative principles is immediately delivered from the contamination of material sins, and all of his desires become fulfilled without delay. So here the same principle is that the chandalas and the very lower classes of society, they by nature are physically very dirty. It's just their lifestyle. If you ever have gone to their house or the areas where they live and you see what they eat, how they eat, and everything like this, you know, their habits are very, very, very dirty. You know, so when they're contaminated, then you can't enter the temple. No one should enter the temple if they're contaminated, if they properly haven't taken bath, wear clean clothes, this, that. No one should enter. So if by the association of devotees, such persons take up purifying themselves by the devotional process, then they automatically become qualified to enter the temple also. Because children of God, the Harijana, must be conscious. Otherwise, the dogs are also children of God, and the plants and the bugs and everything else. You know, why just the humans? We can take everything inside. You know, you just take it, you know, the whole world's a temple. It's just the festival of life and God and prana and like that. And so then one can do that. But the point is that by associating with the devotees, one becomes purified. One doesn't associate with devotees, then one may have externally the brahminical qualities of cleanliness and this. But if the heart is not cleansed by devotional service, it's just a matter of time before such persons again fall from that position and become contaminated. You know? Another point here is that the deity is touched by those who are initiated. It means in the temple, then they have to be properly initiated and everything. We can't, the idea of, you know, first initiates, uninitiates, all these different things, that's not a... Uninstalled deity is sometimes misunderstood. Uninstalled deity in the temple means that those who have second initiation worship that deity. And it's worshipped temporarily for a specific function. Then afterwards, it is put away in a box to sleep, you know, nicely. But when it comes out of the box, only second initiated devotees can worship that deity. So that is the standard, like that. It's not a joke, it's not a game, that we just sentimental or this or that. So I remember there was a set of Goni Thai deities in Prabhupada's room in a trunk, and they were there for years and years and years. They went to the 77 Kumbh Mela. I think they went to many programs. And at the Kumbh Mela, there, they're in the box. We take them in the box there. We set up an altar, stick them on the altar. Then only second initiated devotees worship those deities. And then after, when the Kumbh Mela was over, they were put back in the box and loaded back into the bus and brought back to Mayapur and stuck underneath Prabhupada's shelf. So we have to understand it's not just some sentiment, you know. Home is another thing, but it's... Therefore, in the temples, Prabhupada established like Panchatattva pictures. You didn't have many devotees, couldn't maintain a standard. Then you had a Panchatattva picture, and first initiates then could worship. But deity meant second initiation, and deity meant many pujaris, not more deities than pujaris. Should be more pujaris than deities. So that was at least the standard of Prabhupada's time. So this is being made here. So the whole point is a purification. Yes, sir.
During the bath ceremony that we had, everybody was allowed to touch the deity's feet.
That may be a... I mean, that's small Radha Madhava or the little Radha Madhava? Oh, so that's a special... That's one day. You know? That's a couple of days at that time. You don't see it happening the rest of the year. So that should be understood. Is devotees have to be able to discriminate between the situations. You know? But if it gets out of hand, then it'll be stopped. Because if I've seen devotees, they're so sentimental and so enthusiastic, they knock deities over in their enthusiasm. Like when we do the Abhishek for the deities, when we put the Sahasrar, you're supposed to hold it up high. So you get two people who are strong and tall, and then others pour the water in. When everybody sees it, then all these midgets come along and want to hold it. And they bring it down, and it sometimes hits the head of the deity. And these like this. And they think they're doing great service for the Lord. You know, the bobs are flowing. But it's not. They're not even thinking of the deity. They're just thinking of themselves. So it has to be, like here, it says the ladies and gentlemen, when they go to the temple, they do these things. So if we're just going to be animals, it means it's nice. It means the animalistic show means it's done for Krishna, so it's perfect. I mean, the monkeys in Ram's army were accepted by the Lord. They were monkeys, acted like monkeys, did monkey things, you know. They would bite Ravana's soldiers and, you know, do stuff, whatever monkeys do. It's accepted.
But when you're dealing with the deity, then it has to be done very, very nicely. Like that. So it just, it's all in the consciousness and the situation. So it's not that that one time means that any time they can do. Right? You understand? It means in certain special situations or different things, but that doesn't mean that it's laissez-faire. So most will take it like that because there's no discrimination in this area. It's an area of less contemplation. You know, very few devotees think about the pancharatric system.
What about entering the temple dirty and a lot of guests come in?
That's another thing, but they're guests. They don't know any better. But if a devotee says that, then, you know. Also, we don't give them a place to stay. So then all the devotees who think, well, they go dirty, I can go dirty, then yeah, you move out, you know, there's a front gate there, you can stay on the other side of it.
We used to do it to, like, think of them coming without taking a bath and going to the temple. That's not right.
That's one thing. If that's the situation, then that may be done because you've just come back from preaching. So one has been purified by preaching. But one should know. See, it takes a discrimination to understand this. Is by preaching, then one is purified. It's not us. But generally, due to laziness, we think, oh, why have to bother, this or that. Or that won't fly, because you also have the other side. It means if it's done in the right mood, Krishna accepts even the smallest thing. You know, it's like you've been out on Sankirtan selling books for the deities all day. You come back, you want to see the deities. He accepts that. And then another person who comes and thinks, oh, I should wash my hands and feet first and this and that, then go see the deities, he accepts that. But if someone just thinks, I don't have to bother, it's too much trouble, you know, take my shoes off, I'll just stand at the door and look pure around the corner. Then that invokes the Krishna doesn't see what you give, he sees what you keep. Right? Like that. So that's the thing. If the mood is nice, then Krishna deals in that very light, simple way. And just whatever little thing is there, that's enough. And if we're proud or lazy, in other words, when pride and laziness is the mode of ignorance, when that's there, you know, or the mode of passion, then he looks at the other side. Then, okay, you know, you want this, Krishna will give you that. But he may not give himself. So therefore, it's such a balance. The whole thing comes on just whether we remember Krishna or not. That's the bottom line of everything. So, because the Shastra says this, therefore we're careful about it. We don't know. Right? We don't know. It means anybody bathes Krishna or takes care of Krishna and Krishna Leela that hasn't themselves bathed in everything? No. It means whoever does all these things, and the standards in the kitchen are very high. They don't mix prasad, bhog, they don't have a refrigerator that they keep both in. Like that. The standards, the top standards of deity worship probably are very simple. It's just cleanliness and punctuality. Because it seems so simple, we take that as a lower level. But it's actually the top level. Because it's just cleanliness and timeliness. That's what goes on in Golok. Vaikuntha, then there's great opulence along with that. So Prabhupada has given us actually the higher standards of Vrindavan Braja worship, but how we can take it in the form of vidhi. And this is generally not understood. It's just taken as something simple, but Braja is the most simple. Because it's the most pure. There's no desire for liberation. There's only desire for pleasing Krishna. If it pleases Krishna to make me unhappy, that is my happiness. You know, like that story of the Krishna's headache, you know. So they didn't care if they went to hell. If it got rid of Krishna's headache, it was good enough for us, you know. So it's a very different realm. And Krishna Prabhupada has given, you can see the language he uses, so sweet. Rupa Goswami, they all speak very sweet. They don't speak big scholarly, but you see there's a quote for everything that he gives. So according to the Shastra, he speaks according to Shastra. Right? That is austerity of the tongue. Rupa Goswami does that perfectly. And Prabhupada translates that mood perfectly. And it's very, very sweet. Yes.
So Srila Prabhupada, before starting this mission, this Hare Krishna movement, he mentioned this Kishit Kivalara Bhakta, that if only one person can become a pure devotee, then I will consider my mission successful.
Yes, very good.
And when there was 500 devotees, then he said, now we have enough, now we should take care of the devotees, the deities, and the temples, and maintain what we have.
Mm.
So my question is, or my thought about this is, because I have a personal experience of seeing deities neglected, seeing devotees neglected, and seeing that in the name of preaching we expand the quantity of the organization without expanding the bliss of the individual devotees.
Mm.
You know, Anandam Buddhavada, and it's just expanding the multitude of devotees, or the so-called devotees. So what do you see that is the role of 33 years after Srila Prabhupada has established this ISKCON, what is the role of ISKCON now and into the new millennium?
So it's the role
bring in more people and more people?
Means the Sankirtan movement is always expanding. But the point is that we're supposed to be training those who come in. So the thing is that Prabhupada is very expert in engaging different people's conditioned nature. And the Western mentality many times is more passionate. So they will see everything externally. Therefore, Prabhupada would make statements like, you can tell, you know, how successful you're preaching by how many books are distributed, how many devotees are made. Like this, because this engages that expansive mentality. You see, how you say, like in India, you had kings. But they would generally stick to their own area, and they only attack the guy next door if he's bothering them, or, you know, he bothers people on his borders, and he'll, you know, to secure his own kingdom, he may expand. But not beyond. But the European mentality is like, you know, unless they control the whole world, they're not really happy. You don't find that in any, basically, other place. You know? So any place where those Europeans have gone, and they have that kind of mentality. So now, Prabhupada made those statements many, many times, but it appears that many don't catch the import of this. It's not that you don't make more devotees, because the more you're convinced, the more you're trained, the easier it is to convince others. Right? Isn't it?
The devotees around you are not convinced about pure...
That's another thing. But the point is the training has to be done. Training is the important element. Prabhupada wanted to establish a society of Brahmins. If you establish the Brahmins, then everything else in society is established.
So then it seems ISKCON is not a society for pure devotion, but a society for Brahmanism.
No. It means... If you want to misunderstand in that way, you can. Everyone uses.
But practically speaking, pure bhakti is not so much emphasized. We speak more of Vedic culture.
How are we going to get there? Just like somebody needs to be married. Bhagavad Marg doesn't give one nanometer of space for that. You sit down under a tree, chant all day, and if something comes to eat, you eat, and if nothing comes, you don't eat. There is no space in Bhagavad Marg for Grihastha Ashram. Nothing. Pure Bhagavad Marg doesn't include it. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya, in his intelligence, advised Rupa and Sanatan to describe the devotional process, which includes the devotional culture. Because the philosophy has to be manifest in our life. So if we say, I am servant of Krishna, how do we prove that? So unless there's a body of rules and regulations that show that you know how to behave as a servant of Krishna, then how are we going to do? Therefore, the rise of Vidhi Marg. Right? And Krishna says, if that takes care, that's fine. You can also do that. But if that's not enough, then Krishna says, you work for me and give the results of your work. That is Varnashram. So someone thinks, this is mine. I have a family. I need to do business. I need to do this and that. I got to get a house. So many places to stay. where are you going to get it? It means we can go outside and take a, you know, a Christian, you know, paradigm or a Muslim or a Hindu. I mean, anything we can take. But the point is it's been given to us in the Shastras. We see it, Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, how they followed Varnashram. We see the Bhagavatam, how they're following. We see Arjuna. So if it's in connection with Krishna, it's good. If it's not in connection with Krishna, it's not good. That's the bottom line. So the whole point is we have a nature. We have to eat. Then what are you going to eat? How are you going to eat? That has to be told to us. We don't know. Like a small child, unless you train it, the child will be an animal. So we don't know the culture of the spiritual realm. Because there they don't sit around and talk about philosophy and this and that. They just follow the culture of Krishna consciousness. So that is natural. For us, without love, it is not natural. It has to be established through regulation. Therefore, we regulate our life according to the scriptures, which is in accordance with the culture of the spiritual realm. I mean, in Vrindavan, Nanda Baba and Mother Yashoda are married. All the gopis are married. And they go through all the ceremonies. Brahmins are there. They do yajnas and this and that. They themselves are vaishyas. They have kshatriyas in Mathura that they go and pay their tax to. You know, they have all their house servants and all that. You know, Danishta and this and that. They're all the shudras. You have your pulindas, all your adivasis, your tribals who don't come inside. You know, you meet them outside and they bring musk and all nice things from the forest. So that's the culture. Krishna, that's the way he likes it. So now, when we take the philosophy and the culture together, then we have Krishna consciousness. The Prabhupada said, if you take philosophy without the culture, that's called mental speculation. And that's going on a lot. Or if you take religion, the culture, without the philosophy, that's sentiment. So generally you see those two camps. One is totally into the rules, one who's not into the rules. That's why Niyamagraha is so strongly... You know, after writing Nectar Devotion, the essence of that is in your Upadeshamrita.
So, to that quote, we should apply, but now we have enough devotees, now we should maintain what we have. And was that ever really sort of carried out, that instruction?
It doesn't, well, we see from that, meaning, how you say, he himself continued preaching. You know, so that's going on. The point is you have two things. You're in a boat, and there's people in the water. So then you bring so many people onto the boat. So that's your main consciousness, you know, your main focus, bringing them on the boat. Now, once they're on the boat, if you ignore them, you know, there's every chance they're going to jump off the boat again. You know, you don't feed them, you don't take care of them, you don't give them any direction, or they don't have any taste or association. They'll go away. So it's not that the preaching stops. It's a matter of then the focus goes on training those who are there. Prabhupada said, read my books and study my books. So study is different than reading. So that, he was trying to establish the Bhakti Shastri and this and that and so many things. But we, as very passionate Westerners, have a tendency to overlook these. Either we speculate, you know, what is Varnashram, what is this, what is that, because we don't get into the culture. Or we get into the culture sentimentally and it doesn't function because we can't connect it to the philosophy. There's a direct connection. The philosophical point has a practical application. That practical application is the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. And those are made in such a way that they don't interfere with the natural transcendental pastimes. Because when we left the spiritual world, we weren't looking for a different situation. We wanted to enjoy the situation that Krishna had created. Therefore, the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So if we don't like Varnashram, then we're not going to like the spiritual realm. You know, because Vrindavan is just full of, you know, cowherd men and this and that and so many things. Right? But when those come as Gauranga Leela, they all come as Brahmins. So that's what they do. They have fun that way. That's their pastime. So we don't identify with those. We see what is our body. We see, I have this kind of body, and it acts in this way. So therefore I engage it in these kind of activities. And I'm satisfied. Because it doesn't matter what we do for Krishna, as long as it's for Krishna. Right? It doesn't matter what varna or ashram we're in. If it's done for Krishna, it's perfect. If it's not done for Krishna, it's not perfect. That's the 11th canto quote, where it says, anything that's done for the Lord, that is called pious. And anything that's not done for the Lord, even if it's materially pious, material karma, material jnana, material road, that's called impious. So that's our definition. So when we're describing Varanashram and acting piously, and it says those who, Bhagavatam says, those who in past lives and this life act piously, that means for the Lord. It doesn't mean that they did some karmakanda yajnas. It means their piety is serving Krishna. So we have a different standard of what is piety. Therefore, it becomes very, very difficult many times to understand our application, because we will push that this is what you have to do externally, but the externals isn't the important thing. It's invoking the mood. So you run through the externals and then it invokes the mood. You know, just like a car, you push it and then it may start. So you have to, it's just a way to get it going. It means we start with the gross body, you know, we purify the senses, we eat prasad, we smell the incense and the flowers, see the deities, so the senses become purified. Then we're able to recognize the subtleties of the mind. Right? The karmis are grappling with that like anything. It's like a very, they think the mind is spiritual, you know, rather than it's just material. So then you get the mind, then you can start to see how the mind is working. And you can only do that if you detach yourself by regularly doing something and not identifying with that activity. It means that Krishna is the doer. Not Krishna is the doer, he's the sanctioner, the modes of nature do. So this is explained in Gita very nicely. You know, while opening and closing the eyes and while evacuating or while influencing others, it's the modes of nature. We're not doing anything. So we simply desire to serve Krishna. And then we serve Krishna then with what? We're just a little soul floating in the air? No, a form is there. So in the spiritual world, we have a form that is manifest because of our inherent natural love. Right? So that's called rag. Rag atmika bhaktas means that they have natural, pure, unalloyed love for Krishna. That's called rag, attachment. Now, in the material world, we don't have that attachment. Right? So we have to take the body and still use it in Krishna's service, like they do. They don't just float around and just think about the Lord or something like that. They do practical active service. So we see, what is my nature? How can I live? Can I live as a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, or, you know, brahma, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra? What is the best activity for me to do? How do I feel most comfortable? That by doing that, my mind is peaceful, I just serve Krishna. And then we choose that and then just do. It's just a very simple thing, but we have to be detached. That's the difficulty, is becoming detached enough to work the culture. Because it's like we get the thing, whoever's on the top, you know, it's like whoever can scramble their way up to the top, you know, it's like that's the ideal, you know, the poor kid born in the slums and then he scratches and crawls his way up to the top and becomes, you know, some big guy, and, you know, that's the ideal, or the maverick, he just doesn't follow any rules and just is clever and then he comes out in the end, you know, on the top. So, like that, it just, there's no... So the thing of duty, that is most essential. Because the training means duty. Like Prabhupada was always bewildered how it is that someone takes a vow for initiation or marriage or sannyas, and they'll give that up. It's like it's a duty. You do it. It's not a matter we like it, we don't like it. It's just you do it. Right? And so then when you do that, that establishes rapport with others. Right? Like if I have a duty towards a friend, and I do that duty, does that enhance the relationship or detract it from it? Does it make the relationship better or not? If I perform the duties that are in relationship there. You know, or like a husband and wife. If they are, how you say, you know, faithful to each other and perform their duties and all that, does it enhance the relationship or not? Yeah. So duty creates relationship. But we see nowadays very few people want to follow any duty. And we see there's no relationships. Relationships are breaking down more and more because they don't want to follow the duty. Because duty in the beginning is boring. It's a mode of goodness. You know, it's boring in the beginning and tasteful at the end. You know, I had one grihastha telling me the other day, he was going through and just doing the duties and this and that. And then after I think about it, I don't know how many years, 5, 6, or 7 years, and he says, then the whole rasa started, you know. Then it was like that depth of relationship where they really felt that they were working together to serve Krishna came, and then it was very dynamic, and they felt very inspired, you know, like that, to serve Krishna and all that. Before it was just duty.
So, can I ask?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
In this, in the same book that you're reading from now, there's an interesting quote from Srila Prabhupada where he says that there are many societies of pure devotees, and one can take advantage of such societies. And ISKCON is one of these societies. But we see nowadays that by legislations and resolutions, we bar ragatmika bhaktas from coming into our society.
That's
the fear of deviating from what our
Because Prabhupada also warned us about that certain institution. You also find in his books where he mentions, be very careful of the institution, because you're not letting in so much the individual, you're letting in their institution and their values and how they run. And
but
then
is our institution so much better than any other institution?
There's the only difference between us and the Gaudiya Math is one thing. Only one thing. Nothing else. We have exactly the same philosophy, same books, same everything, but there's one unlimitedly major difference that why Prabhupada says that he was very careful to protect this society. We have a GBC, and that GBC runs the affairs of the society, and everybody, including gurus and managers, is under that GBC. And when he talks about the others, they threw out the GBC, which is the order of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. This word GBC is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's word. Governing Body Commission is his word, not Prabhupada's. They threw it out and decided to make a world acharya. So, therefore, their head of their mat, no one is above him, no one is equal to him. This is called Atsamurdva. So this is a quality of Vaikuntha. So when we say ragatmika societies, I don't buy it. Because Krishna is under his devotees. In Vrindavan, you don't have no one is equal to and no one is above. That's a mood of Aishwarya. So the padati for running their institution is Vaikuntha. And the padati of ours is Madhyam, is actually Rag. Though we may not be on that platform, and those in these other mats may be on that platform. But the institution itself, that's what he's telling us to be very careful about.
Now,
because when that comes in, that's you know.
In my question, I was not referring to Gaudiya Math, because I personally have no...
When you say ragatmika bhaktas, I don't know of any other sampradaya where you have ragatmika. Because, see, you can say raganuga. Ragatmika means they have to have come down. Raganuga means they're coming up. Mm-hmm. And there's no problem in saying raganuga. We should not take offense. Because Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita says Rup and Raghunath came down. All the other four Goswamis are coming up. They're coming from the material world. And they perfected themselves. Sanatana Goswami is Sadhana Siddha.
Where is that?
It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm not sure. I've come across it a few times. But he says those two. That's why we always say Rupa Raghunatha Pade. But Sanatana is always mentioned, or you'll have Rupa Sanatan and Raghunath mentioned, because Sanatan is the older brother of Rupa, and he represents the Diksha Guru, while Rupa represents the Siksha Guru. So that formality is more with the Diksha than with the Siksha. So therefore, he is mentioned. But otherwise, it's not a problem saying someone is a Raganuga Bhakta, or a Bhava Bhakta. But Ragatmika means they've come down from the spiritual realm. Means they're already in Vastu city. They've always been there. They're not developing Sarup city. Sarup city means that they're coming up.
But maybe we have become so immersed in this power of us and them that we fail to observe that there are other societies. According to Srila Prabhupada's quote, there are many societies.
But
so
you have
become
to
become so much us and them and pointing fingers. And
that's there, and but it comes from both sides because of the Kanista nature.
But which other societies could there be? Can you...
It means you have Sri Vaishnavas, you have the Madhvas, you have the Nimbarkas, you have the Vishnu Swamis.
Like that he's referring to?
He's that or the other? It means we grew up here in Mayapur. And many of these men that people nowadays are enchanted with and running off here and there, I've been dealing with them since 76. Going to their place, we go to their Vyas Pujas, we go to their programs, and this and that. But we know where is the limit. Because
within the Gaudiya Math, they're also very strict between institutions. They won't let somebody from one institution come over and speak too much in the other one. Formal programs, they will. They don't. They're much more rigid than we are. We're much more open in everything than the Gaudiya Math. I mean, if you know them and you've lived with them for the last 20 years, then you know what we're talking about. Because they're like that. And their idea is that if you want to expand, then you have to make your own mat. So that means there's no cooperation. It's a confederation of just people who come together. But there's not, it's not a machine. It's not a dynamic preaching machine that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted. He wanted everybody to work together and move forward the whole process of Krishna consciousness.
In my humble opinion, Mahaprabhu's Sangathan movement will include naturally all pure devotees.
It includes. But the thing is they identify with their institution themselves. Don't mind, but I'm just trying to point out that these very advanced devotees have their institution and they work within it. And they have their duties within it and their authority within it and their relationships with the other mats and all that. We have no problem with the individual. No problem.
Because a pure devotee has no designated sarva padaminiya muktam.
He has no, but he still takes the mood of a preacher to, and you have to organize things from outside. It takes management to run this material world.
But it seems like we are half-hand philosophy. In terms of spreading Mahaprabhu's Sangathan.
That may be, but then what is the solution?
Solution is preaching, kirtan, prasadam, pravachan.
Yes, and then what do we do when we're not doing those three?
And understanding also what to preach when you preach.
Yeah, though that's there. But now, what are we going to do? What would be our program during the whole day? Means chanting, dancing, and taking prasad, that is the essence of our movement.
Well, if you say pravachan is preaching.
Yeah, so now what do we do in between?
That fully engages, as you know.
It does, but now who cooks? Anybody just cooks? Or those that have the nature of cooking, they cook.
That is very wonderfully organized within ISKCON. The best cooks are.
No, no, that's there. But what I mean is it takes some organization to do these. If we read the pastimes of the Eternal Associates, when they had big festivals, it was big management. Big management. So therefore, you have to have an institution to do something big. Otherwise, we can sit down under a tree and forget about the institutions. The institution supports the mission. But the point is that everybody has their institution that they're working within. Right? So therefore, in that, you have to see that things are going very nicely because there's different flavors in that.
So it seems that the very vehicle, the medium by which we try to expand, that same thing becomes the limit of expanding Krishna consciousness.
Yes, it's limited by us. Means Prabhupada was a great manager. Because he was a manager and Krishna conscious. So to that degree that they're balanced, to that degree we can expand. Therefore you see in some places it expands very nicely, some places not so nicely. It all depends upon the individuals there. It's very individual. I mean, someone can preach nicely, organize, take care of the devotees, satisfy the devotees, and then it all goes very nicely. But generally you'll find devotees are dissatisfied due to a lack of culture, not philosophy. It's generally the relationships or the dealings.
May also be some lack of siddhanta in certain individuals.
That may be.
Because we don't actually discuss tattva too much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's there. But we have to be very careful as the tattva is very, that has also a particular conditioned nature. I mean, someone who leans more towards jnana, they're going to be more into the tattva. Unless they discuss the tattva, then they're not satisfied. And less technical words are used and this and that, they're not satisfied. Because of the gyan side, it's a contamination of the mode of goodness. It means not pure goodness, like that. So someone else may not have that contamination, so they just want to work. Their contamination is karma. So that they like to just do activities. So if
those who are into the gyan can explain the Siddhanta in a very sweet way, like we see Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta and Rupa Goswami, then everybody will take it. But we tend to either you're a pundit or you don't care for these things, or you just, you know, Jai Haribol, we don't worry about these things. So unless we can develop that class of people who can understand the Siddhanta, right? Siddhanta is more important than tattva, because you can have tattva, but unless you understand the Siddhanta behind it, it takes you different places. Right? Because tattva takes you to the spiritual realm. It describes Krishna, the material world, and the living entity. Right? Their relationship, then what are the activities of that relationship? What is the goal? But that can get you to Vaikuntha, that can get you to Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura, you know, and it can get you to lower Vrindavan, and it can get you to Vrajavrindavan. So therefore, the Siddhanta and the mood in which that Siddhanta is taken, that's the most essential. So this sweetness here, this is more important. It's more important to understand this relationship that Krishna, Prabhupada is talking here of the relationship. You're going to the temple, you see the deity, you want to bring something for the deity. That's rasa. So many will say that Prabhupada only explains lower stuff. No, he explains the highest stuff. Just he is not attached. He's not a jnani. He's not attached to the terminology. So he'll speak it in such a way, it's said the topmost thing. You know, there's nothing in all these different scriptures by the acharyas on the whole process of rag and bhava bhakti and this that he doesn't talk about. He just doesn't use all the terminology. Sometimes. But generally he doesn't. So therefore, it's looked like his is just lower this, that, and all that, and so he wants to get into the, you know, these things. Tattva is very important, but tattva and rasa has to be seen together.
Well, tattva is the basis for rasa. Without tattva...
No, rasa is the basis for tattva. That's the difference. That is braja.
Fair enough, but we are not on that platform.
Therefore, but we have to understand that Prabhupada, knowing this, he wants to make sure that we don't get sidetracked by jnana and this and that. We don't want to be sidetracked by karma, jnana, or yoga. So he just wants to very sweetly just bring us in, give us the philosophy, and then take us out the other side. And he gives everything in the philosophy. And if you read other acharyas' books, you'll see it's all there in his books. Like that. So we have to be able to see, means that's the training. We start to see the two. We may not have rasa, but we have to be able to see it. That is why, let us say, the someone who is a Vrindavan devotee very much appreciates the relationship between Krishna and Arjuna. They don't say, well, I don't want to hear this. They're very happy to hear it because it's rasa with Krishna. They're interested in rasa. They may prefer their own. I'll give an example. You have a mother. She has a relationship with her son. And now, the son doesn't just sit around staring and smiling into the face of the mother all day. He goes out and plays with his friends. He goes to school. He goes out with, you know, other, you know, father, uncles, or this or that. Now, would we call her a really balanced mother if she wouldn't hear anything except for about topics when she's with the kid? If you came and told, hey, your kid in school today did this and this marks and he was playing out here and, the, you know, he made so many goals and this and that and, you know, he went with his father here and there. And she'd go, I don't want to hear these things. You know, I have my rasa with my son. What would you say about this person? You would say, this is not a balanced personality. So in the same way, Prabhupada makes it very strong, the point, that those who say that they can't listen to the dwarka pastimes or this or that, they're not actually advanced. It means... the Brajavati may prefer to hear those. It means if you get into that, they'll just start talk that. But if they hear the others, they're happy. They're happy to hear anything with Krishna because it's Krishna. It means Jayadev Goswami, it's our, one of our top literatures. And the first song is Keshava Drita Narahari. He sees it's Keshava who's come as Narahari. He doesn't see someone else. Just Keshava has come in this way to protect the devotees. And when he wants to establish the Vedas, he comes as Matsya or this or that. Or they just see as Krishna. They see Krishna in everything. So they don't see any problem anywhere. So this whole thing is, Prabhupada is given, what he's given is very, very perfect. So one has to be very careful about others saying that
it's different, or it's not high, or it's lower. And you hear these other institutions, they have individuals who you may go and deal with, but most of the people they associate with, and many others in these societies, then they speak differently. And that is what Prabhupada wants us to avoid. But an individual here, and like Prabhupada very much appreciated from the Sri Sampradaya Sampat Kumar Bhattacharya. You know, he felt he was a very nice Vaishnav, and they had very nice relationship. He said he's a real Brahmin. You know, he came in and he chanted all the mantras, and you know, he said that they were Brahmins, not the ones that installed the temple in Vrindavan. He wasn't overly impressed with them. But he said, this have a nice relationship. And they'll discuss philosophy on their platform. You know, they'll get into certain aspects and this and that. And as long as you discuss the supremacy of the Lord and the service of the living entity to the Lord, then it's nice. So like that, there's so many around. But we can't go beyond that, you know, totally into their areas, because then they have a different angle. Their goal is somewhere else. They don't want to go to Braja Vrindavan.
So in our sampradaya, meaning in our movement, Prabhupada started it as the Hare Krishna movement,
yes,
meaning Radha and Krishna.
Yes.
Should there even be a discussion that Radha and Krishna is the devata, they are worshipable deity?
Yeah, naturally. Because naturally.
Sometimes you hear, like we were discussing yesterday, it depends on what was your goal? Inclination.
That's there.
Like
means,
but in our sampradaya, it is strictly Braj Bhav.
It is, but at the same time, you see, because Lord Chaitanya is avatari, therefore, even devotees that are in other moods can be attracted by this mission. You see, Murari Gupta, they told him to worship Radha Krishna, he couldn't. So it is possible. The point is Lord Chaitanya attracts them all. From Ram Leela, from Dwarka Leela, from Vaikuntha, everything. Like that. But what he's giving is the Braja Leela. Someone takes it, nice. If they don't take it, you know?
Murari Gupta is I don't recall having seen that Murari Gupta is referred to as an Acharya.
It doesn't matter, he's a Parshad. And we have to be very careful about acharya means teaches by example.
Well, in terms of following that, the move. The
point is that when you said that we can't attract anybody else, there Lord Chaitanya is attracting all kinds of people. That's my point.
So
now, but we specifically follow our acharyas. But it's not that someone might not be attracted by the other rasas. The opportunity is being given that you can take up worship of Radha and Krishna. But they may be attracted by something else. It's rare, generally you see in our life, but it's possible. And we don't worry. You know? What do we care? But for ourselves, we may be specifically have a particular mood that we want to follow. It says you must follow in the footsteps of a particular devotee of Vrindavan. But that's any devotee of Vrindavan. So just that you've opened Vrindavan, that's very special. The other avatars don't do that, except for when Krishna comes himself, once in the day of Brahma, and Lord Chaitanya. Then within that, then Lord Chaitanya has opened specifically worship of Radha and Krishna. Before that, it's not available. It means Krishna there, if someone surrenders, fine. But if not, it just doesn't happen. But Lord Chaitanya comes and specifically gives it. Like that. And so then, that is there. But the point is it's a simple point, is that Krishna is the enjoyer, right? Someone who pleases Radharani can please Krishna the best. So if you want the best happiness for Krishna, then you will assist Srimati Radharani. So that's it. It's not a big thing that we have to turn the whole society up and down for. That's it. Means you understand it. That's it. Married women don't sit around and snigger all day about the boys and girls. That the teenage kids do. When they just hit puberty, then they're all this, that, and this, all that. And then the ones that are engaged, they're loudmouths. As soon as they're married, quiet. So sometimes you'll see that those who come down and those who are coming up, the ones coming down are quiet. Because they know you don't tell an 8-year-old girl about married life. You tell her you have to do your duties, you have to be very properly behaved, you have to be chaste, you have to be dutiful. They don't get into any other nitty-gritties. That, when they're married, then they'll tell them. So that is many times the difference. So you get devotees who come across all these far-out aspects of Radha and Krishna worship, and they do exactly what Lord Chaitanya says not to do. Lord Chaitanya would discuss this with 3.5 people. Or 2.5, right? 2.5? 3.5. 3.5. That's it. But we're willing to sit down in an open class and speak these things. Right? So this is not according to Lord Chaitanya. We may say, but it's not. And we see Prabhupada, when he speaks these things, he speaks it in a very covered way. So those who know, they can see it. Those who don't know, they don't see it. They see devotional service, but they see their level. You know? Therefore, the younger, you know, the prepubescent, they don't notice. They just see, okay, chant Hare Krishna and smell the garlands and take the Charanamrita. And then the others, then they start to see, hey, you know, there's some rasa here, you know. And then others see, then it goes more and more and more like that. Therefore, you have Vaidhi sadhana, Raganuga sadhana, Bhav sadhana, and Prema. But what is the discussion of one level and another is not there. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada, they're very expert at speaking one thing that deals with all four. That is their speciality. That's why we're said to be Saraswatas. It means of Rupanugas, we're Saraswatas. Because we use this broad aspect. You know? Vishwanath, when it crosses from bhava to prema, it's bhakti. Before that, it's not bhakti, it's bhava. And before that, it's sadhana, it's aspiration. It's not bhakti. End conversation.
Can you repeat that statement? Sorry.
Means if you read Vishwanath, he takes the point that prema is bhakti. Any stage below that, mm-hmm. all the other 8 stages, is not bhakti. Because it's not. It's not pure, unalloyed devotional service, so therefore it's not bhakti. But the reason he takes this is so that someone can understand what are their anartas and what are their goals that they have to work towards. But you can only use this for someone who's become conscious of anartas. Otherwise, you use this before and it's like, you know, forget it. They just, you know, pack up and, you know, give up. So therefore, you see, Prabhupada will follow Baladev's presentation, Bhaktisiddhanta. Means he takes... Shraddha is the beginning of it's devotional service because it's meant for devotional service.
Like it is said, Sharanagati is not devotion, but it is favorable for devotion.
Yeah.
Full surrender is not bhakti.
You know, so the whole process, full surrender is.
So in the sense that Sharanagati
means those 6 stages is still sadhana,
yeah.
But those go to higher levels because if you've read the song book. You see that they go right through into Bhava Bhakti and Prema. Like that. He'll have songs that are like right down on him, a wretch and disgusting and this and that, and goes right up to where he's talking about pastimes in the, you know, Surup Siddhi, within one group of songs. So he's showing what does it mean accepting and rejecting? Like, we reject, okay, we follow the four regular principles, you know, we accept those and we reject doing those things and we chant Hare Krishna and this and that. But then he gets up there and it's that we reject going even to that area where Chandravali is. So that is, on that platform, Sharanagati. Mm. So the whole thing is there.
So even up there, there's Asana.
Of course. Must be. Otherwise, where's the rasa? Like that. It's always.
But still, we may.
It's just like there's the Pandavas and there's the Kauravas. Because if it's in relation to Krishna, it doesn't matter.
As reading Yudhishthira Maharaj says, if there's an enemy from outside, then we are 105 brothers. But if the fighting is within the family, then we are 5 brothers against the 100 Kauravas.
Yeah.
So what I'm gathering from what you speak is that within ISKCON, which is like a society, meaning not all pure devotees. It's a society of Shudras, Vaishyas, Kshatriya, Brahmanas.
No, it's a society of those aspiring for devotional service.
In various.
And they engage their conditioned nature in the Lord's service according to their degree of realization and ability.
And then within that, there's a Hare Krishna movement, which is what Prabhupada really wanted to give us.
No, that's the life. I mean, the whole point is this is the point of Baladev. He takes it from when you start Shraddha, because it's in Krishna, it's devotion. It may be very small. It may be there's one, you know, fraction of a portion of a drop of Shraddha, and there's a whole ocean of material desire and nonsense. But that fraction of a portion of drop of devotion, because it's connected to Krishna, is sat. Well, the whole ocean, all the material worlds put together, you know, one quarter of the cosmic creation is shadow. So it's illusion. It's asat. So one drop of sat is there. So this is how we preach. But as one develops, then we start to point out, now you have to get serious. Difficulty comes as devotees don't want to face up to their anarthas. They don't want to get serious about this. I'll just chant Hare Krishna. But you just chant Hare Krishna, fine. But if we're chanting and then we're doing this and we're doing that and so many other things, then we have to deal with these aspects. We have to, because we're dealing with conditioned nature. So it becomes a balance, is that dealing with the conditioned nature is only useful if it's in relation to Krishna. If it's not, there's no glory to being a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Human, you know, means non-Vedic is not human. So it's human life. So it has the ability for higher consciousness. But if that consciousness is not focused on Krishna, it's a waste. You know, you might as well have been an animal, because at least the animals do what Krishna wants them to. You know, a dog's always a dog. But a human should act like a human, which means be God conscious. So it's, therefore, you know, for us, it's the movement is very big. You know, it includes like Narad Muni and everybody. The same time is, we also have our method of organization and management that have been established also by the Acharyas. So there has to be a institution to see, set standards and everything, and see that standards are being maintained. But then that has to be seen what that is. So devotees get bewildered about the two. It's just like you have a legal entity, like let's say you have in a country, and the country is like you say Poland. It's 98% Catholic, right? But if the average, you know, Polish person on the street does some crime, do they go to the church? And catch the church and say, hey, you're a Christian person, you're a Catholic person, here is just robbed the bank. You know? No. Even though those people go to the church, you know, once, two, three, four times a week. Very religious people. But it's only the priests in the place, they're held responsible in this way. So you have the legal entity with its officers and all that, and you have the mission, which includes everybody who, you know, for us, who likes to read Prabhupada's books and try to mold their life according to Prabhupada's directions. And both go together very nicely. The institution is for the purpose of encouraging and training those outside. That's why where we started, you know, we started the conversation. That's where Prabhupada wanted to create a class of Brahmins, means who are fixed in Brahminical behavior, that they wanted to benefit others by giving knowledge about Krishna. And would preach. And by doing that, that would endear them to all the community and raise the whole community in that, even though it's maybe there. And then they preach and then everything happens.
Now in 1959, Srila Prabhupada wrote an offering to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And in that he quotes Bharat Bhumita, and translates it as, first we become perfect in God realization, and then compassionately distribute that to others.
Yeah. Means that we are distributing.
So how can we preach unless we are realized?
Because we are simply, we are postmen. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada is realized. So therefore, he's preaching. We go out and preach, it's not us doing it. Krishna makes that very clear in the Gita, that you've influenced someone else, it's not us. We've wanted to please Prabhupada and the Acharyas. We've done it, Krishna sanctioned it, results came. So we have to understand Prabhupada is a very unique and special person. So if we simply take these books, try to imbibe them, and try to give that to others, they are getting realized. They are getting realized knowledge. We're talking about if they do this other than that. which you see many places they're doing. They may make up their own thing and do their own way and things like that. Therefore, you see amongst the Ramanujas, they don't speak anything other than what Ramanuja spoke. Or those Acharyas that came in the line that very clearly brought out what Ramanuja said, like Vadiraj and some of these other persons. You know, the Madhva is the same. You're called a Madhva because you speak what Madhva spoke. You know? So we're called ISKCON because we speak what Prabhupada says. Like that. We're called followers of him. We're Hare Krishnas because we speak what Prabhupada says in the books. So the founder Acharya is a very unique position. He's not just a guru or another guru in the line. He's been specifically come so that the mission can expand. Yeah. So we simply, Prabhupada says, perfect means, it's just like this, Prabhupada gives the example. You have an engineer, a perfect engineer. And then you have somebody who is not a perfect engineer, but he works under the direction of that perfect engineer. What work he does will be perfect. Because that engineer says, put this here, do this, do that. And it comes out perfect. So, therefore, as long as we take that, then we can be leaders of the society. You know, leaders of society, leaders of our families, leaders of the communities, leaders. But we have to speak what Prabhupada said. We don't speak, we have no standing on our own. A guru doesn't have a standing on his own, zero. He stops speaking what Prabhupada says, he has no standing. Right? Not within the society, on his own. But within the society, nothing. We have our standing. One is called a guru, or one is called a leader, or you know, one is advanced to it because he's speaking what Prabhupada says. And if he's not doing that, he doesn't have a position. Therefore, you don't get the problems of somebody leaves the movement and all the disciples go with him. Because they're thinking he's the man. No, Prabhupada's the man. Right? But they are speaking what Prabhupada's there. They are giving that. That person is taking the trouble to make sure that you understand it. Therefore, you have commitment to that person. And there is relationship. And there's reciprocation. Because what they're giving you is very, very special. But they don't have any... So it's a very... means our philosophy, Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, it's very subtle. Because you have to be able to accommodate two things happening at once that seem to be contradictory. So devotees will come... Okay, there's two things happening at once. One will take one will take the other. And they'll argue and they'll bring out quotes of Prabhupada this, quotes of Prabhupada that, fight like anything. But actually, you have to see them both together. You don't see them both together, you don't see what Prabhupada said. It means you want to talk about one aspect, but then you talk about another aspect. You know, we want to talk about the lamp, we can talk about how to polish the lamp. So we can talk, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for instance, with preaching, we always say that we should go out and preach. Preaching is the best thing to do. Yeah. But Krishna, in the end of Bhagavad Gita, having preached to Arjuna for 1 hour, he says, the one who explains this supreme secret to my devotees.
Yeah.
Pure devotional service is guaranteed at the end of the company.
So being when we go out, that's the point here, these chandalas and all that. It says, due to their unclean habits, they are prohibited, but at the same time they are given other facilities so that they may be elevated to the highest grade of devotional service by association with pure devotees. So by that association, pure devotee means someone who is following, it means either the pure unalloyed devotee themselves or those who are following in their footsteps, trying to please them by speaking their instructions and following their example. Then that is there, because you say, Prabhupada says like this. Prabhupada says chant Hare Krishna. I'm not saying chant Hare Krishna. Someone else is not saying. We may have heard it from that person. That's Krishna's arrangement. But you've heard what Prabhupada says. So by that association, by going out, they become devotees. But it says there, but the problem is if you just go out and speak to them once, means you're supposed to continue speaking. Means you speak in an outside program, those people come to the temple. Then you have to start training in them. They're in the temple, they're in their home. Then you have to continue that process. It's not that you go out and speak once, you know, or go to a university and speak and do some programs and after some weeks or months and a few people join from there, and then that's it, it stops. No, now you have to continue. Means you have to get them from Shraddha to Prema. So if we just develop Shraddha and then move them a little bit along to Association of Devotees, kind of, and a little bit of Bhajana Kriya, and then stop, we haven't completed the whole process.
But it's So it seems like what I'm still asking is that in the new millennium, what is our role then? It should be basically, as Prabhupada said years ago, now we have enough. We shouldn't think of expanding so much the numbers of people, but we should train those who already
have. We don't have to really worry about expanding the numbers because most places can't get anyone to join anyway. Like that, because they've distracted themselves. They've distracted themselves from the main thing of Krishna consciousness into economic development and other kinds of things. That's why you see, as Prabhupada went, he started emphasizing more and more varnashram, because he just saw devotees couldn't stay on the level of sadhana. But the problem was, is to get into that, then it was maya. But Prabhupada didn't say that. So we ourselves created this problem between the congregation and the temple devotees. So therefore, if you moved, you didn't live in the temple, you were in maya. You know? And then the person who was in the temple, they moved out. They know what everybody else is in the temple is like, so they say they're in maya. And then in this way, you have a very nice rasa. You know? But the point is if someone is good at... What, huh?
Sounds like, this is maya. Sounds like maya. But...
Yeah. So the whole point is it doesn't matter what the situation is. Those that feel comfortable in the temple can be very dynamic they're Krishna conscious, they're able to help others, and that they should be in the temple. And those that is not their lifestyle, they should live in their home. They may come to the temple for a short time, get trained, you know, but otherwise they shouldn't be in the temple. You know, why move someone into the temple and then after a while kick him out?
And then maya pool seems to be a change of bit a bit of time because you have people living at home at the same time going to the temple every day or serving in the
temple. Yeah. But the community thinks the brahmacharis in maya and the brahmacharis think the community is in maya.
And maybe.
So that aspect.
The community is there for reconciling.
Yeah, of course. I'm just joking. Like that.
What is the
Siddhanta? Well, one thing is there is that the millennium is nothing special. That's one thing.
Fresh beginning, because many are burned out and many are frustrated and misgivings.
But then we're using an external thing. Well, it's natural. We're using an external thing to incite some...
Like a New Year resolution.
Yeah, like that. But technically the millennium, because it's supposed to be 2,000 years from Christ, was in 1997. Oh, that's another thing. But I say it's just saying, you know, 2,000 years ago from Christ's birth was 3 years ago. They've just by new calculations figured out that it's already 2003. You know.
Millennium Indian time.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing. Yeah, India is already in last back a few millenniums, I think. Main thing is just if there's faith in what Prabhupada has given, and we just try to understand that with a very nice, cool head, then it works. We have to give up our taste for issues and what has happened in the past. It means you can learn from the past. But if you don't learn from the past, it's nothing special. Now, there was one devotee here, he was a major in history. And amongst the history majors, you know, all the, you know, the whole history department in the, you know, Western academic world, they say the only thing you learn from history is no one learns from history. I mean, and these are top schools, that's what they say. So that's the only thing. But otherwise, if we use it, you know, this one did this and this one did that, you know, how does anybody make a start? Somebody, okay, you know, I've been in nonsense, this, that, I want to get it together. And then when they want to get it together, then someone will say, yeah, but, you know, 15 years ago, you threw me out of the temple. I've heard it. And then the person becomes discouraged and just, okay, I'm not coming around here. And neither can you get anybody. It's like this. No one will give, it's like, you know, the Henrys and the McCoys, you know, they just won't give up, you know. You have these out in the Okies, it's a group of mountains in America, and you have the hillbillies. And there's two camps. One is the Henrys and one is the McCoys. Like you say, the real McCoy, it's an American saying. So McCoy is, you know, he's the real, the old, you know, the top guy. So they're two hillbillies, real simple guys. And they've been feuding for the last, I don't know how long, you know, it goes back into the last century or something. And now and again, you know, if one of them sees the other, they take a pot shot at each other and this and that. And they're so drunk, they generally never ever hit each other. But they just won't forget, you know. Or you go into, you know, the Yugoslavia, no one will forget. We see these fights now. These go back 400 years, sometimes more. You know, this one supported the Turks, and the Turks did this to us, and these guys came in and did this, that, you know, and it goes back hundreds of years. So that's, we can take that padati, which is the modern Western thing, or we can just take the devotional process, and somebody has anartas, we may point that out, but the devotional process, we see here, by smelling the incense, all sin is removed. But that's not a popular idea nowadays. There must be prayaschitta. So if the prayaschitta is not in relationship to expanding their devotional service, it doesn't do anything. You know, the sixth canto is just to establish that prayaschitta does nothing. It's by chanting the holy name and faith in the Lord. Right? You know, the whole story of Ajamil, and then you have Vritrasura, full-on demon, but pure unalloyed devotee. So it just goes through to show this doesn't work. It's got to be, okay, they've done this before, what can that be learned from that? We have to be broad-minded. But devotees have to give that space. But that's not the discussion you hear. You know? It's like, you know, GBC bad, gurus bad, sannyasis bad, temple presidents bad, you know, everything bad, you know? So you can't get anywhere that way. No, you can't at all. Because you have to be able to give the space. Okay, everybody's conditioned, everybody's made mistakes. And, you know, you generally find that many who make these really big mistakes, they come from a non-Vedic background, so they don't know how to interact with each other. They don't know how to behave nicely or talk to their mother nicely or, you know, relate to their kids or different things. They just don't know. Prabhupada told Subhag Maharaj personally, he said, don't give up all the things that your mother and father taught you as far as proper behavior. He said, you know, you're with all these Westerners, they got their own way of doing things. You don't give up all these things. You know, Prahlad Maharaj's father was a full-on demon, you know, biggest demon. He dealt with him very nicely, as a proper son should, speaking nicely, standing. When he's called, he comes, you know, but he doesn't agree with him. And when he doesn't agree, he says in a very nice tone of voice and everything like that. So that's duty. So therefore, the relationships go on nicely. You know? The problem is not that Prahlad Maharaj is behaving badly. He's just talking about the enemy of Hiranyakashipu. So the thing is we have to accept that there are ways, there's Vaishnava etiquette. And that Vaishnava etiquette is the nectar devotion. It is Varnashram. And if we accept that, that is our culture. And it tells how to do. It helps, that means, you know, children are supposed to go to their parents and offer their obeisances. Mm-hmm. The wife respects the husband. The husband respects other members of the family. They all respect the sadhus and other people like this. And then there's very nice reciprocation. But if we don't accept anyone as authority, don't want to this and that, culture doesn't even start. Even the animals accept authority. The biggest dog who has the biggest, you know, teeth, he's the boss. Why do you think these kids that grow up in all these disjointed families and really bad, you know, in slums and, you know, poor, why do they join gangs? Because in the gang there's structure. There's someone in charge. He tells you what to do. You have loyalty to him. They have to you. They'll protect you. You know, you do something. You have an identity. So that's why they go for it. Because they didn't get that at their home. So we get an identity as a devotee of Krishna. And now how to do that, then we see, okay, I can do by this, I can do some puja or book distribution or teaching or some management or some administration or this I can do for Krishna. And I can relate to that and do it very nicely for Krishna. But it's not me. But it gives an identity to engage the conditioned body and conditioned mind. Though we're not attached to it. So that's the thing is, the Western culture is you do something only because you're going to get a result. You know, the whole process of karma kanda, you do it because you're going to get a result. You know, though they work on, okay, I do this now and after next life or something, I'll get a big result. You know,
But the Westerners, I don't see the result now or something like that. You know, in the general, what you see in the television and how they're, you know, the commercialism like that. But if you go to very good top families and top, you know, business and top everything, they're much more restrained and cultured and control their senses and everything. You know? So even on that, then they get farther. They have a relationship. They have their community. So if we want to create community, not a community, community means just a relationship between. The definition is you have to have common values. If there's no common values, you do not have community. You can have a bunch of people living together, but there's no community because they don't have common values. What is the goal in life? How they're going to do that? You know, what they eat, what they do for the kids, you know, how they behave, dress, you know. You go into any of our communities and you'll find that each family has, you know, very different. And those that are a little similar, then they bond together. And there's little groups, you know, 4 or 5 devotees here and 4 or 5 there and a little there and there. And you see little pockets because there's so, such a vast. So the point is you just take what Prabhupada gives and just accept it and then try to figure out how to make it work. It's not, oh, okay, it didn't work. It was something for the 60s, you know. Then, no, we did wrong. What did we do wrong? And then correct it. Because we've been here since time immemorial, you know. Another few mistakes we can just add on to the unlimited, you know, whatever it is, you know, quadrillions of, you know, lifetimes that we've been here. You know, I mean, what's a few more? It's no big deal. It's a holy name. You smell the incense, it's gone. You know.
I think the other day when you were explaining that with many of these issues, what we have to watch out for is we can either, if we're in a position to do something about it, I mean very tangibly, then there's benefit of, you know, discussing. But for the average devotee, you have to watch out for the fact that these issues can be just a jolter.
Yeah.
And therefore, in that regard, detract.
Yeah.
From service, because I remember even 2 years ago when Bala Bhadra was here, he said to me, so what are you going to do about it? You know, if you're some, oh, this is. And then if you realize no matter what you did, it wouldn't really make that much difference. Then he was saying, actually, what you're fighting here is the modes.
Mm.
Nothing more. There's no, you know, personal clashes and things. Actually, what you're so it needs often a devotee of higher discrimination to point that out, because it's a very easy thing to slip into, and then everyone's thinking, well, it's about devotees, it's about the movement, therefore these are real tangible issues. But again, somebody said, okay, let's sit down and discuss Krishna book or Krishna's pastime. There's not so much attraction.
It doesn't get the bile going.
There's no juice. What's the latest juicy? Oh, well, did you hear what happened?
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in commenting on Rupa Goswami's Prajalpo Niyamagraha, Prajalpo, this is one of the things, if you talk about devotees, you know, and things that have been wrong or this or that, but it's not for the benefit of either yourself, someone else, or that person who's done the wrong to be benefited, then it's prajalpa. It doesn't matter it's about devotees. It doesn't matter it's about devotional service. It's still prajalpa. Because you can't do anything. It won't do anything for you. The Vedic culture first trains what the individual does. It lets you know what is the individual's duties. Then the next stage is what are your duties in relationship to others within the culture. And then it stops there for basically everybody. Then those who can do those two nicely, plus manage or administrate, then they are taught how to organize the society. That's the way all the Dharma Shastras are set up. Because if you can't figure out yourself, you know, who you are, and you can't figure out how you relate to others, it's very difficult to manage others. So it's this point that you're making on
studying yourself, but it's done simultaneous. They both go together. You may start with yourself first, like Prabhupada always talks about the individual. So many times he'll talk about the brahmachari, the grihastha, this and that. And then other times he talks about relationship between them. The brahmachari meets the grihastha, the parents, the teacher, the parents, the student, the teacher, the citizens, the king, the brahmins. That's the other part. And then he tells things that are administrative. So he also gives how to run things, how to run.
And also that statement you made about in the individual's progression, when we're going from shraddha, when one gets naturally to a stage where actually should become more introspective, which is Taizen as an art and a gritty, then instead of that introspection, we somehow turn it outward and start, well, this is wrong, this is. Of course, we're not saying we have to be blind to things that are wrong, but we have to assess to what degree we can tangibly make a difference.
We can change others if we can change yourself. Exactly. We can't change yourself. Very difficult to change others. Like I've seen this like in the Gurukul. You have a boy that doesn't behave nicely. If you can get him to behave nicely, then he's made that change. He can change so many boys who don't behave nicely. Because he's done it himself, so he knows how he went through it. So if you can't do that, then it makes it very difficult to change others. So the self study and the self the contemplation must be there along with our activities.
And another interesting thing you said in the corollary to that was, for any of this to succeed, the senses have to be somewhat subdued. Because if the senses go wild, and then even if somebody else is enjoying some object of the sense, I may not be envious, but the senses will definitely be enlivened by it. And I'll get even wilder, and then it's very hard to actually get anything. So I think in the Vedic system, that automatically byproduct is the senses become controlled, become more directed.
Yeah. I mean, see, the whole process is engaging the senses. So the Varnashram is simply how to engage the senses, mind and intelligence and the ego, in the Lord's service. That's what it's for. And we see the devotional process is exactly the same thing. But just sadhana on its own, the pancharatric system, can be run without Varnashram. It means it's complete in itself. Getting up in the morning and falling, because it's a Brahminical culture, it's complete in itself. But if you need more than that, then you just add on to those parts of the Varnashram that are necessary, but with the same goal. It means Krishna says, surrender unto me. That's the first option. Just fully surrender. So that's first. Then when you go to, if you can't do that, then follow sadhana bhakti. That doesn't mean that the goal is still not surrender. And if you take up Varnashram, it doesn't mean that sadhana bhakti is not there. It's just that one supports the next. It's just, so if that clear line is there, then it works. But if we take them on their own, without seeing the connection and all that, and not seeing our place in it, then we can make a real mess of it. We can make quite a mess. Ganga, you said?
No, I was thinking about it in the concept of time and vision. For a Western, the concept of time is very short right now. Sometimes in India, we speak with people who are culture, and for them, the concept of time is my previous life, my previous future life. It's a much more expanded. Why they're so beautiful is because they know that if I behave in a certain way, this will give me a future result. But the Western mentality, due to the passion and emotion, is that I want it all. I want it right now. I don't care what. I'm gonna cut the tree. I'm gonna spoil the old nature. I'm gonna, cut the old world into pieces because I want to enjoy it right now. I don't care about next life. I don't know if it comes through, if it exists. So that, due to that vision of short vision, then they end up in a mess, killing their own self. So the concept of time, a vision of time, we become cognizant of our previous, Krishna is eternal time, the one who awards punishment, results, enjoyment, everything.
Very interesting.
There was that, I think it's the article in Science of Self-Realization, but as regards somebody preaching when they're perfected in the knowledge, this lady wrote in to Prabhupada complaining about some book distributors she'd met, and she made that point. Why isn't it that they first perfected in the And Prabhupada said, actually, Krishna becomes so pleased they're doing this. So therefore the advancement will be so rapid. So maybe they're a little rough. You kindly forgive them. But actually, that advancement comes from Krishna, and this is most pleasing. Let me read that sloka that Krishna says, "You preach the secret to my devotees." But Jivara Surup Hoy Krishna Nityadas, everyone is devotee of Krishna. Some remember, some don't. So someone who's out there preaching automatically is getting a lot of Krishna's mercy and is very tangible.
Another reason that we get so much into the preaching, because the preaching comes from Lord Chaitanya. Krishna doesn't as so much as Govindaji preaches. He may he speaks Bhagavad Gita, but he leaves it completely up to the living entity. But Lord Chaitanya is very, very much in anxiety that all these living entities aren't listening. They've heard it, this, that, they're not taking it. Because Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. Like that. It means they take one step, they reciprocate. Advaitacharya is the Lord, Mahavishnu. He can save, the whole universe, the whole material realm. But he doesn't, because this is how he works. As they surrender, he reciprocates. And he's looking around there in Shantipur and seeing nobody has any interest, no one is reciprocating. Therefore, none of the Vishnu Murtis can save anybody here. Because we spoke, they won't take it. Because this is what he's saying. So therefore he said, only Lord Chaitanya. So he does that puja to call Lord Chaitanya. Now why does Lord Chaitanya preach? Because Lord Chaitanya has taken the mood of Radharani. And Radharani, being the best devotee, wants to see everybody engaged in Lord's service. So Prabhupada says the devotee is more merciful than the Lord. Because the Lord is like, he's told you, you do it nice, you don't do it, he's unattached. He wants you to be there. He loves us, otherwise he wouldn't come in our heart, in every species of life where we go. But he's leaving it up to free choice. Free choice, we left him. Free choice, we're going to go back. But when Krishna is in the mood of Radharani, that impatience is there. That why they're rotting here, they could be serving Krishna and being so happy. So the reason that we preach so much is because of Radharani. That's why the Gaudiyas have this specific flavor. So when we say we'll stop that, it's not good. It means we don't understand who's preaching. So that's Radharani's mood.
Being spoken this mana shiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami wrote teachings to the mind, preaching to the mind. And we see Govinda Das, Bhatya Hare, Manas. So it seems that the pure devotees preach, but to their own minds more than to others. Now we know that.
That's not a problem, because how much time are you with others? And how much time are you with yourself? So therefore, they're always preaching to the mind. But as soon as they find somebody, Jari Deko Tari Koha Krishna Upadesh, then they explain to them, because they're also Krishna's devotees. And they give whatever they can. They just, like Garadhar Das, he would just get them to chant Hare Krishna. He'd come up to the Muslim and say, chant Hare Krishna. And the guy would say, I'm a Muslim, I don't chant Hare Krishna. He'd say, thank you, and go to the next one. Knock on the door, chant Hare Krishna. You come back tomorrow, I'll chant Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you. That was all his preaching. Just one Hare Krishna, it's already the path has started. So it's a wonderful balance if we take it with the culture, the philosophy and the culture together. It's very wonderful. If we take one or the other, then we have a lot of problems. You see? Yeah.
They asked Prabhupada this question, that there are some Gaudiya Vaishnavas who say that unless you are perfect, you should not preach.
Mm-hmm.
And then Prabhupada said, none of you are preaching, I am the preacher. Mm-hmm. You are simply assisting.
Yeah. He directly
confirmed.
Yeah, yeah.
And furthermore, he said, that when you preach, if you speak anything, mm. you have realized, mm. or not even realized, but it's 80% for yourself mm. and 20%
mm, for others. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think he also mentions that the preachers by preaching become perfect. I mean, Sukadev Goswami became perfect by speaking Bhagavatam and Pradikit by hearing it. So when somebody gives a class, they themselves benefit because it's up to Krishna what's said. You know? And if you say these things, you have to follow them also, you know. So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, well, you have to listen, otherwise you say something funny. You know? I remember one sannyasi I was with in South India, and we were traveling. He was very, very tired. He was giving class. It was only him and me in the class, you know. And he was speaking, and he started falling asleep, but he was still talking. And then he said something that wasn't right. And he heard that and it shocked him and he woke up and it was kind of like, you know, who said that? You know, it's kind of like, you know, you know, and then I explained it and then he was laughing and then went on with that. So, yeah, you have to listen. It's good. Anything else? Or? Yes, Marcus.
I very much appreciate your point that you can't change others unless you can change yourself.
Hmm.
Mm. So it seems to me that if we can get that together ourselves, we're pretty much on board in terms of making a movement quite the
mm, yeah, yeah. Because rasa means your one thing is interacting with another. So depending on the mood of the one, it draws that mood out of the other. Like you see a very innocent little kid, they come up to you and start saying this and that. Then you bend over and you deal with them in that mood that they do. And if the kid comes out yelling and screaming like that, then you deal in another way. So that's the whole, that is rasa, is what the one person does and what that brings out in the other. You know, so that's the whole science. Now it's on the spiritual platform, and that's the nectar of devotion is describing. Then it's also in the Varnashram system, then it's that rasa. You know, it's like somebody protects another, then that invokes from the other person's surrender. Or someone surrenders, it invokes protection. Like you would see with the king. Someone surrenders, the king protects. You know, you have that, what's it? Maharaj Shibi or something, and the dove and the hawk. So because the pigeon came and surrendered, then he's given shelter. Like that. So that's the whole thing of rasa, is that exchange. And then, but those are based on rules. And if it doesn't work like that, it's rasa-bhas. You know, whether it's spiritual, material, or sensual. You know, like if you put something that is not of a good taste, like you take a rock and put it on the tongue. Right? The tongue is the enjoyer. You know? And then the rock is what is enjoyed. So if that's put there, then it doesn't give a good, the rasa is not proper. Like that. Or sometimes it's explained even the other way. Is that what you're putting on the tongue, that's the enjoyer. Because it's dead matter anyway. So the sweet is being appreciated. The tongue is the one that appreciates the sweet. Like you take a sweet and put it on the tongue appreciates the sweet. But it's dead matter. But the principle is given. So rasa goes through everything. It's just a matter of understanding it. That therefore, the reason relationships don't work is there's no rasa. You know, that the different members of the community or families or individuals, wherever they're staying and when they're relating with someone else, if they don't act in a proper way, they don't invoke from the other the proper mood either. And then it just falls apart because there's no rasa. You know, so that rasa is then backed up. We're not sentimentalists by
tattva by the Siddhanta. It's that we are servants of Krishna, then this person is a servant of Krishna, I respect that person. You know, I offer obeisances, the Lord's in their heart, they're a devotee. So you see devotees, you offer obeisances. Like that. So it creates, all these things create the mood. So if the system is understood, it invokes from someone else. You know, therefore you see, is, you know, you have the, even in the West, the story of the Beauty and the Beast. You know, you have this really rough, nasty guy, but this very gentle, you know, lady. And she's able to transform. Because she always deals gently, he has to change his mood. Even though he's very rough for some time. It takes time to change. But how you deal is how the whole thing. You know? So it's a very... That's why I was saying the point is the both are there. And generally what's happened is this tattva is to some degree understood, but the rasa is just like we avoid. Because the Western culture is nirvisheshvanyavad. It's impersonal. So the personal aspect means I have to have a duty to others and all this and not myself. And so it becomes very, very painful. It's just painful to...
Unfamiliar.
Yeah, it's unfamiliar. That's all. So therefore you can't blame. So much insanity has happened, so much this and that, you know, or it may be going on now, but it doesn't matter. If it's just understood, then you just change it. You know? That's the unattached approach. It's just, okay, we sit down, figure it out, and just, okay, go. And that, you know, and it still may be rough for a while, but at least we know what we're supposed to do and try and, you know, get together. You know, Prabhupada said, what is it, our children's children, you know, they would be the ones who could run the culture and everything. Like that. Come on. You know, armor, just depending on Prabhupada's mercy to, despite all these shortcomings, to go back to Godhead. And we see so many. It's like we have God brothers. Someone was just telling me the other day, two God brothers that had left. I think one was Sudama. And the other was it Pitraputra? Did he leave his body? He did. So Pitraputra was in a coma for like 2 weeks. Just out cold, lying on the bed. And his wife was sitting there every, you know, just sit there and, you know, do whatever, knitting, this and that. And then just at one point, he just sat up. He just woke up, sat up and said, Prabhupada, you've come. And then he died. He just fell over dead. So it's like that. Knowing our position, like Ramachandra knows the monkeys. He knows they're monkeys. He accepts his service. So, you know, we may be wild Westerners, but he accepts. Because he knows, you know, we're trying according to our limitation.
I think out in the West, sometimes when you try to help people, then people become suspicious. But when you try to help personnel, people start to think, what this guy wants?
Oh, I run into that all the time.
What is it, you
know? Oh, yeah.
Because nobody is personal with them.
Oh, yeah. You can't be doing this something for nothing. You know, it's like, it's like, you know, what this guy want? Very difficult. You know, whatever. There's no trust, because it's just, we've been... You know, how you say, material world is so much difficulty, especially non-Vedic. The Vedic, then the problem is in the Vedic, that's why it's a funny thing. The Acharyas will talk so much about following the Vedic culture. Vedic culture means being Krishna conscious and engaging the body, senses, gross and subtle body in the Lord's service. That's the definition of Vedic culture. So then, how you say... What were you saying? Oh, yeah. So they'll talk about it, that it has to be done, this, that. But at the same time, is you'll just see them completely just smash the whole thing. Because if you just get situated in Varnashram, then you taste the emotional platform. You know, the heavenly emotional platform that people look for, and that, you know, closeness and togetherness and like that. But you may get overwhelmed by that and completely forget Krishna, like the demigods. You see them, they're always, everything's going wonderfully for them. And they're always forgetting Krishna, you know. Indra gets the most happiness of all those in Sanskrit, and he's always forgetting. But he's a devotee, you know. We always see, you know, that we just went through this Ritra Sura, then he said that he's shown how he's in a lower position and materialistic and all this and that, but then at the end of the chapter, he just says he's a devotee, him and Ritra Sura, and therefore he was feeling bad that he had to kill him, because he was a devotee. You know, so it means both sides are there, is that the Varnashram without Krishna is useless. Okay, it's human, it's better than animal life. But that's like Krishna's like fourth, you know, if you can't, you know, do service to Krishna, then at least, you know, open a few hospitals or do this and that, or, you know, be a nice guy, you know, and, you know, so and that, and then if you can't do that, then you can take up impersonal philosophy. It's like, that's the worst. And then but then better than that, is meditation, and then better than that is, you know, active service. So he takes it right back up, but it's like the bottom is the jnani is on the bottom when it comes to devotional service. Though culturally they're higher because of their renunciation in that, and that's a very important element in the Vedic culture, is detachment, because we have to become detached from the material world and attached to Krishna. So they're respected for their detachment, but as far as what is better for devotional service, engaging oneself, body, mind, and words in the Lord's service, that is the superior system. That's so, the Yukta Vairagya.
But they are impressive to the people, but not to Krishna.
Yeah, like that. But in the culture, the jnani is higher than the karmi. Like that, it must be. You know, just like the Brahmin is higher than the Kshatriya, is higher than like that. But on the devotional platform, none is higher than the other. Then it's a matter of just your devotion. And that's between basically you and the Lord. But in there's no higher and lower. Though there is a relationship, means like the Kshatriya is managing, so others should listen, otherwise he can't manage anything. It's just good management. So the Brahmin, he studies, so then he can give a class, or he can teach, or he can do the puja, because he knows that, that's his field. But it's not that that's better than managing for Krishna, or doing business for Krishna, or taking care of the cows, or just helping others for Krishna. Is it, none are different, there's no difference. Absolutely no difference. As in the pure Varnashram system, Daiva Varnashram. But in the Asuric Varnashram, where Krishna is not the goal or the center, then you have, because of the levels of consciousness, then you have one is better than the other. Brahman is interested in mukti, Kshatriya in Dharma, Vaishya in Artha, Shudra in Kama. So therefore their consciousness is different levels. But a devotee, he's an Anandamoy. And then, you know, until he becomes perfect, he has lapses into these lower levels of consciousness. And that. And so anartha nivritti in the whole process of sadhana bhakti is clearing those away, so that one always stays on anandamoy. And it works very nice. Anything else? Or we'll end here. Chahal. Srila Rupa Goswami Pada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainita Gaura Premanandi.